hot and humid, 50% chance of more showers and thunderstorms. A high of 89 today. Heat index approaching 96. Right now, humidity 81%. Wind from the southwest at 18, gusting to 25 miles per hour. 73 degrees Racine, 72 in Kenosha, 69 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. It is always fun to welcome back into our studios Linda Guy. For those of you who maybe aren't aware of that, especially if you're a relatively new listener to WGTD, I always feel like Linda is, in a sense, WGTD royalty of sorts, because Linda's husband, Bill, for many, many years was the news director here at WGTD and the creator of this program, The Morning Show, and my predecessor as host and for a few years co-host. And it was upon his death that I assumed kind of the full reins of the program. But Bill was the one who laid the groundwork with his excellent work. Linda has been on just about every single year over the last few years. I don't even remember how many.
Doing that quite a few.
to talk about a special event that is something that a lot of Kenosians look forward to each and every summer, namely the Secret Garden Walk, presented by the Four Seasons Garden Club. And Linda is a past president of the group and handles much of the publicity for this event. And as the name might imply to you, the Secret Garden Walk involves an opportunity for the public to visit certain gardens in Kenosha that are private in the sense that they are owned by people with their own private homes, and for the most part at least, these are gardens that are not easily visible to the public. You don't just drive past these various homes and see these gardens. They are in a sense sequestered, but open for public viewing on this particular occasion with the Secret Garden Walk. And there's seven different gardens. We're going to be talking about all of them and talking a little bit about how this Secret Garden Walk gets put together. And we'll be sure to tell you about some of the charitable outreach of the Four Seasons Garden Club, which this event helps to support. Linda Guy, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thank you, Greg, and thank you. Thank you for those kind words. I still run into people periodically who will comment on how much they enjoyed Bill on the Air, and it's good to know that people do remember him.
Yeah, he was a master, and I feel like I learned a lot from him.
Taught me everything I know.
Well, you're pretty adept at the microphone, I must say, too. Just say a quick word about how you got to be such a ferocious gardener yourself. Is this something you inherited from your own parents, for instance?
Oh.
Or did this interest envelop you on its own?
Gardeners come to the art, if you will, through so many different paths. My dad enjoyed gardening. His mother enjoyed gardening. They were kind of what I call natural talents. Things just grew for them, and it was wonderful. Neither one of them. Well, my grandmother had a few specialties. She grew the most fabulous begonias along the side of her house that I still remember from, you know, when I was a kid. And my dad battled the shade in our backyard and would experiment with things over the years. But I don't think either one of them could give you the Latin names or the species and all the background of every plant that was out there in the yard. They just enjoyed what they were doing, and the dirtier their fingernails were, the better they liked it. And I do remember, with growing up with that. But I was not really an avid gardener myself. I had lived in apartments and had the occasional hanging basket, and that was really all that I had the space or, for the most part, the interest in, until I bought a condo and had a little tiny patch of land. And I, gradually was adding plants and trying plants and failing with plants but kind of developed an interest. And at that time I had lived elsewhere in the country, but was living much closer to Kenosha down in Buffalo Grove at the time. So I had my dad kind of encouraging me too. And all of a sudden there was this new thing that we shared. I had come back to this area because of family, and that became one of the common elements that kind of brought us together. And gardening, I think, does that for a lot of people. It ties the generations together.
Sure.
We'll talk to gardeners that are maintaining lovely spaces, and so oftentimes it starts with, well, my mother was a gardener, and, so-and-so, or my grandmother, I used to pick strawberries with my grandmother. With a lot of people, it comes either in the genes or in the environment, I'm not sure, It's something that holds us to family, holds us to the earth, and so many of us just find comfort there.
Sure. Well, and maybe that's also one of the reasons there's something called the Four Seasons Garden Club. Can you just say a word about, aside from sponsoring this big event, which is your chief fundraiser for the year, what primarily happens with the Four Seasons Garden Club, and in what way is this love sort of stoked and nurtured?
Well, this is a group that was originally formed in 1963. So garden clubs in general have a long history. You can probably go back to at least Victorian England and such, and there have always been people that love to garden, and it, you know, that common interest brings them together. Here locally, in 1963, the group that was formed here, this was back in the area of ladies' clubs and ladies' luncheons and hats and white gloves and that sort of thing. And I think the original club, to my understanding, was a group that was more interested in flower arranging and flower shows and that side of garden clubs, as opposed to, as we call us, the dirty fingernails, you know, side of gardening. And there's been that evolution over the years that the club, and we still have, you know, longtime members who, you know, remember the old days and how things have evolved and changed over the years. And now I think the majority of us, the thing that bonds us together is the actual digging in the dirt and comparing you know, successes and failures and just having this common interest in what you can develop in your own garden and how you can appreciate other people's gardens. The group meets we meet once a month with the exception of January, and for the most part, our meetings consist of about a 45-minute presentation on some element of gardening. We've had presenters this year that have talked about insects and things that, you know, various unpleasant things that can invade your garden. we've learned a little bit more about roses. We've done some hands-on things. So we've built terrariums. We have various projects like that. It kind of runs the gamut. And after, like I said, a 45, maybe an hour presentation, we break for a little social time and some refreshments, and then we go to a business meeting. And part of our business that has developed and expanded over the years is the charitable opportunities that we have, the different projects and such that we sponsor. Pretty much falls into the category of scholarships, land conservancy, and beautification projects. And we work with groups of all different backgrounds. We like getting a chance to support a garden with a school. The scholarships that we support are obviously, we're talking continuing education, anything in the field of horticulture, from floral design through landscape design and that. So we're dealing with the mature student there, at least the college level student, but on some of our projects we're dealing with grade school kids who are just starting out in gardening and a butterfly garden. Oh my goodness, what a wonderful idea! So you know, that kind of runs the gamut. We've also, for years, we've maintained the Margaret Meyer Memorial Garden down at Kemper Center, and we do Earth Day and Arbor Day plantings. We maintain a collection we contribute to a collection of horticulture books with the libraries, and of course we support the downtown Kenosha the business district planters and baskets that they, you know, used to to decorate downtown every summer. We've worked with Lemon Street Gallery on a beautification project over at Union Park. Most recently with Hospice Alliance, landscaping project at their home out in Pleasant Prairie. So these are all the projects. These are things that are discussed at those business meetings. And they're also it's the answer to where does the money go from the Secret Garden Walk? It goes to support these local projects.
Okay. We're speaking with Linda Guy, who is a past president of the Four Seasons Garden Club, and she is here to talk about this coming Saturday's Secret Garden Walk here in Kenosha, in which people have the opportunity to visit seven different private gardens in Kenosha that otherwise would not be easily accessible or visible. And it's a real treat to be able to visit some of these beautiful gardens. How many Secret Garden Walks have there been? Are you keeping track?
As near as we can tell. No, this is our 16th year.
Okay, great.
We finally figured out. It's easy to keep track of. It's 2016, and it is our 16th year, so I think from now on we'll be able to figure that
out. Oh, very good.
The answer to that question fairly rapidly.
Great.
But the early years, it was a little more loosely structured, and we've kind of refined it over the years.
Yeah, you really have it down to a science. My understanding is most of the time the Secret Garden Walk will involve a particular part of town, so you're not driving hither and yon all over creation to visit the particular gardens.
That's right at the top of the list of the things we've learned over the years, that people, when they attend this event, they want to see the gardens. They don't want to spend a lot of time driving to and from the gardens. So the walk has become more and more logistic driven in that we try to keep the gardens in a fairly close proximity. Some years were more successful than others. We had, was it last year, I believe, most of the walk was an actual walk. It was a walking tour. You could, you could walk to between the gardens. And this year we've managed to do this again. Three of our gardens are on the same street out in the River Oaks subdivision. Two of them are next door to each other. One other one is a little ways down the street and across the way. And that's kind of the western cluster of gardens this year. And then on the eastern end, and this is all on the south side of Kenosha, but the eastern part of the tour, there are again two gardens that are on the same cul-de-sac, so Park Once and C2, and then there's two other gardens that are in relatively close proximity to that cul-de-sac. So we're really pleased with the assortment of gardens, and again with the fact that we can offer more walking and less driving.
Right, that is the point of all this. Right. So that's great. And these are not necessarily, in fact, I get the impression that even not very often are these members of the Secret Garden of the Four Seasons Garden Club.
You're absolutely right.
Right. And they might be somebody that somebody in the club knows, but in some cases it's even a complete stranger to most of you, at least.
Exactly. We get the names of gardens, primarily through word of mouth. But in fact, there's one on the tour this year that is there simply because one of our member, or actually a couple of people on the committee, looked at this house and said, that looks like a fabulous garden. I wonder what's behind the house, and left a note in the mailbox. And that homeowner said, yeah, sounds like a good idea to me. We took a look at the garden. It was everything we had hoped it would be, and that's kind of the ingenuity that it takes sometimes. We have a new a new chairman of the event, and she's done a fabulous job with assistance from the committee. But she's been very resourceful, and this was one of the things that came out of the resourcefulness and the organization that she's brought to the party.
And I suppose that as the years go on, this event becomes a little better known to the community as a whole. I mean, probably 16 years ago, if you knocked on the door of a complete stranger and said, "We have this secret garden walk," you know, they would have probably looked at you funny, not understanding what this event even is. I think probably by now it's getting to the point where more and more people have a pretty good awareness. I mean, we like that. Yeah. So that probably makes some of these overtures maybe more easily received.
Well, but there's surprises on both sides. I mean, we had a booth down at Harbor Market the last two Saturdays where we were selling tickets and giving out information on the event and such, and there were people who are long time but they have attended the walk for years and years. Oh, wouldn't miss it. Yeah, I came to get my tickets and that sort of thing. And then we talked to other gardeners, and they were indeed gardeners who for some reason had not known about it. How can this be? We've been working so hard.
Yeah.
So there's always opportunities like that to get the word out there. But word of mouth is always, you know, kind of the best thing as far as getting, you ask about, you know, bringing in new gardens. Every year at the walk, we have sign-ups at each and every house. If you have a garden that you want considered for the walk, or if you have a friend who's got a garden and you like to volunteer some information, we're always happy to come and take a look at the garden. We don't presume to know every garden out there in the city, and there's some lovely surprises.
Right, and so, of course, this event by its very nature is of secret gardens that one way or another are at least somewhat hidden from easy view,
exactly.
Easy public view. So it makes it all an even more special treat. There are seven gardens on this year's Garden Walk, and mm-hmm. two of them are repeats, you say, by popular demand, essentially.
Exactly.
So tell us about those two that are back by popular demand.
Okay, well, we don't have a repeat garden every year. We love to show new gardens, but periodically there are gardeners are gardens are always evolving and changing based on the gardener themselves getting more involved, perhaps expanding the space. Sometimes it's driven by nature itself. One of my favorite stories is this was a club member who had a fabulous shade garden, and she specialized in hostas. She had just the most a wonderful assortment of hostas, and all beautifully displayed and identified. And then that tree that was providing most of the shade for the garden, they had to take down the tree.
Mm.
And suddenly what had been a shade garden was now a sun garden. So there was a lot of work that went into redoing that garden. We had seen her shade garden on the garden walk a few years prior. Well, 5 years later or so, there was a whole new garden to look at. And a lot of our people, like I said, a lot of our garden guests are people on the garden walk, and of course they remembered it from the first time around, and to show it off again in totally different circumstances was quite amazing to most of the viewers. The two gardens that are repeated this year have one of them has been undergoing constant updates and renovations. We first saw the Tricosi's garden about, and I'm not sure on the year. I believe it was right. It's got to be close to 10 years. 10 years ago, they were on one of the earlier tours, and they have a lovely garden that was originally based on ideas that they brought home from a trip to Williamsburg.
Hmm.
And they have structured and selected plants and built structures and all, that would have some resemblance to the garden at the governor's palace at Williamsburg.
Well, so they saw their own land and thought, that's sort of like this is roughly comparable to
right,
the layout
right.
and size.
I mean,
and
you never know what you know where inspiration is going to come from, and taking what you loved about one garden and kind of adapting it to your own environment is something that they chose to do. So I mean, they have they have some outbuildings as you would in a colonial garden, and they've also actually their property abuts family property, so it kind of has that feeling of a little community that you might have had with a colonial environment where you know the son lives next door to the father and there's shared space and that sort of thing.
I noticed in the summary of this garden that he also makes I think Mr. Tricosi makes mention of the fact that they have some sort of memorial area in the garden, which is intriguing.
That's something that, you know, it's not unusual for someone who feels that sense of peace in their garden to want to devote a portion of the garden to memorializing family or friends or occasionally pets. You know, there's that little space that's set aside, but they've done a lovely job of creating a peaceful little reflection spot that memorializes family.
So this was on the tour before, but now it has some of these extra elements from the Williamsburg.
It's expanded. It's changed. We could have gone back a couple years after the tour and found, you know, changes and differences. But 10 years later, there's a number of things that have changed through the years.
Very good. So, what is the other repeat garden on this year's tour?
I think a lot of people will remember the Potter Garden. This is a garden on 79th Street, just off of Cooper Road. And this was kind of, and is still, kind of the ultimate secret garden. The house is set quite a ways back from the road, and there is a broad expanse of lawn with very little in the way of plantings and flower display and such in the front. However, you step through that garden gate, and you have stepped into a paradise. The backyard has been done in a primarily kind of an Asian theme. There's a koi pond. There's a couple of ponds, as a matter of fact. A deck that extends over one of the ponds. There's a sunken garden area. They were on the tour not all that long ago, but again, they have expanded, changed, and what has kind of driven the change and the inspiration there is they've become enamored with lotuses, not something you find a lot in Midwest American gardens, but the ponds that they have, the Asian theme, has really lent itself to working with lotuses, and they've had some real success there. So there's just exotic things that you're not going to find in every garden down the block.
Right.
So,
what is a koi pond? I've seen the name, but I don't know what that refers
koi
to.
Koi refers to the fish that live in the pond.
Oh.
Koi is the Japanese goldfish.
Ah.
Big, fancy Japanese goldfish.
Okay.
And I say Japanese. I don't. The fish don't have a nationality, but it's something that grew out of Japan and was very popular there. These fish get very big. There are some in the pond that the potters maintain. I want to say, maybe 18 inches long.
Wow!
And they've very much become pets. They know when it's feeding time. They'll follow you around if you know, if they think there's a chance for a treat. They're just, you know, little puppies with fins.
And so that pond then is one of the hallmarks of the decor that they've chosen. So, well,
thank
that sounds.
Thank you for asking that. I don't, you know, that some of these phrases get thrown out, and you assume that there's a basic understanding, but
not with me.
We need to cover the basics.
Absolutely.
Sometimes.
So those are the two gardens that are back by popular demand. They've been well received in the past and are back on the tour this year. We should talk then about the five remaining gardens.
Absolutely.
And the headline for one of them is really pretty intriguing, and you're responsible, I think, for the headlines for the most part in this booklet, guide booklet.
I can't take credit this year.
Oh.
Majority of these all came, in fact, I think all of these came directly from the homeowners.
I know that they've done the writing about their particular gardens, so which is fun.
Sometimes I fill in the blanks with a title, but this year we had some very innovative writers working on.
Yeah, well, one of them, the headline is "Life After Emerald Ash Borer," and of course, a lot of people know what those words mean, at least to some extent. So, how does that? How did the emerald ash borer figure in the garden of this particular couple?
This was another situation, like our friend with the shade became a sun garden, and she had the same situation. She was not. She, the family in general, were not gardeners when they moved into the home. There was a certain amount of planting, and there was a small pond there and sort of thing, and all of it was dependent on the shade of the ash trees.
Well, and it's so sad to read here about how the home was built in 1995, and whoever built it was so careful to preserve every single one of those ash trees that were on the lot, or as many as humanly possible.
Uh-huh.
And so they obviously loved those trees, and with good reason, and then they're all gone.
Yeah, and as you're reading that, you can hear the sound of a chainsaw in your ears.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? It's, unfortunate. So this lady who had never really been much of a gardener, bit by bit, as those ash trees were lost, has become a gardener and has learned through the process that what was very happy in the shade is struggling in the sun. So bit by bit, she has replaced, she has added, she's adapted to her new situation. Sometimes we... when we change the garden, it's because a change in our taste, or a change in our sophistication with, you know, just understanding the plants that will work or not work for us. In this case, change was forced upon her by Mother Nature, and she has adapted and created a new environment.
That looks like something very much worth seeing. The next garden that is talked about, in some respects, it looks like it's kind of the opposite situation, a lot with all kinds of trees. And as far as I can tell from what's written here, those trees are still there.
So this is
a gardener who's had to kind of think about the trees and work with a lot of shade and make choices accordingly.
Exactly. I mean, there are those of us, and I'm one of them, that battle shade all the time, and then you reach a point where you say, wait a minute, this doesn't have to be a battle. You know, what works with my shade? How can I develop a lovely space and let the shade work for me, perhaps? But one of the things that makes that garden a standout, or just something that's apart from other gardens that we've had on the tour before, this gardener grows a lot of her own material from seed, and she has she does a lot of hanging baskets. She does annuals through seed. She has been experimenting with doing more perennials, seed grown, And for the majority of us, it's so much easier to go to the garden center, and the thinking is, well, the bigger pot that I buy, then, you know, the faster it's going to grow, and I'm going to get, you know, more bang for my buck, and that sort of thing. She's been working within a budget, and the smaller you start, the less it costs you, and the smallest place to start is with the seed.
Right, as opposed to a small plant,
yes,
that somebody else has,
exactly,
has nurtured into being.
Yes.
You are starting from scratch.
All that nurturing is going to cost that grower, and it's going to cost you in the long run.
Wow.
So it was her way of putting together a garden on a budget, and has apparently developed a talent for it.
She's grown
things from seed that most people wouldn't even consider attempting.
Wow. She mentions hostas, and she mentions that her favorites are three salmon substance hostas that are over 3 feet tall and 5 feet wide. That sounds amazing.
That's one of the, definitely one of the larger varieties. In fact, anybody, you talk about bang for your buck, if you've got space to fill and you've got shade, Summon Substance Hosta will pretty much do it for you. They are big, well, I can't use the phrase big daddy because that's actually the name of another hosta. But they are the big daddies of the garden.
Yeah. So. You have an interesting garden that is from somebody who calls herself very much an accidental gardener.
Yes.
Somebody who lived someplace where there was So this is someone who that is this accidental gardener used to live someplace else and now has beautiful space they never had before and suddenly had to become a gardener in a sense.
I can totally identify with that.
Right. Sounds like your story.
Like I said, I'd originally been gardening and hanging baskets and that was about it. And then suddenly had a small space that I could work with, and on a much larger scale, this is the same story for this gardener. And as most of us do, all of a sudden we're presented with opportunities. It's like, ooh, I can plant all these flowers. I can do this. I can do that. And you just start planting willy-nilly, and some things work and some things don't. And that she confesses in here that it reached a point where, you know, she had significant failures in her, but she had neighbors that took pity on her and started, you know, kind of schooling her a little bit and volunteering plants that they knew would work in her environment. And she too has a very shady border. She has some sun, but that shade border can be difficult. That can be a challenge to deal with. And she is right next door to another very talented gardener who does happen to be a member of the garden club. Pat Lighting is her next door neighbor, and I suspect it was Pat who had contributed some of the plant material to the Ebner Garden.
One thing I really like in Marilyn Ebner describes the construction of this garden. She says, after a lot of groaning, sore muscles, and a lot of laughs, my yard began to take shape. And that's really a nice thing to read because, of course, Serious gardeners can probably be more serious than is helpful. I mean, it probably doesn't hurt to be ready to laugh at the things that don't go quite as you design or hope.
I mean, you know, you and I've said a number of times just in this conversation, successes and failures. You know, your successes you can show off, and your failures you can toss in the compost site and nobody knows. So you just, you know, you've got to laugh at some of these. And, you know, it was kind of like, what was I thinking? Of course that, you know, that sun-loving dahlia is not going to do well in the dark shade back here. You know, that sort of thing that, you know, you just kind of slap yourself in the head and say, okay, I've learned from that one. We'll move on to next year. Have a laugh and deal with it.
There you go. Well, let's talk about the Lightings Gardener. Again, Pat Lighting, as you say, is a member of the Four Seasons Garden Club. And it sounds like they've had a very healthy attitude when it has come to putting their garden together.
Well, Pat has a fabulous garden. She works with a lot of annuals. Most of the people that are on the tour are perennials. Perennials are their the mainstay of their garden, but Pat enjoys working with annuals, and she's created a lovely border garden. They have a very large backyard, but dominating that yard is a pool. I've got a beautiful big pool. And so I think their garden demonstrates how you can have a fabulous garden space, which has become more than just a border garden around the edge of the property. There are planting areas that abut the pool and have kind of integrated it all together. But it shows that, I mean, you can have a pool, which is kind of a family environment. You can create a family-friendly environment and still have a lovely garden. And Pat makes light of the talent that she has. She's one of those natural gardeners. She just seems to know what's going to work well in this space or that space. And she's developed it by herself over time. And you look at this vast area, and it, like, again, like I said, it is a large backyard. And you're thinking, oh, she's got to have help with this. And no, the woman has done it all on her own.
Wow.
And bless her heart.
Mm. So, and there's a good photograph of it in the Kenosha News article.
Yes.
that the people may have seen.
Yes, The Kenosha News did profile and spoke with Pat at length. And again, she's very modest about her efforts, but she's done a fabulous job.
The seventh and final garden has a very, very interesting aesthetic around it, in that it is a beautiful garden, but it is not just flowers.
You're so right. That's the Haller Garden, and the first thing that you notice as you approach the house is, yes, those are fruit trees in the front yard, and Mr. Haller is the primary gardener in that at that home, and he's done a wonderful job of integrating fruits and vegetables into flower gardens or display gardens, however you choose to term it. But aside from the fruit trees in the front, as you go around to the rear of the house, and he backs up against the lake there in River Oak, so you've got not only, you know, the lovely view of the lake, but then you turn around and look at the house, and you've got lovely planting areas around the house. But within those planting beds, it's, you know, the different flowers are going to catch your eye at first. But as you look a little closer, you might see that there's some Swiss chard in with the flowers, adding the color of their stalks to the color that he's working with there. There are tomato plants in the back that have been incorporated into the growing. So I think in the majority in herbs too can be a wonderful addition to any garden. It's providing, some scent and some different texture and such. So between herbs and vegetables and then the fruit in the front, everything kind of just works together like it might in nature.
Wow. So. He also makes mention in his summary of how they are trying to use a fair number of native plants.
Yes.
Of course, we hear about that a lot, that unfortunately a lot of the prettiest things that are probably even seen in most of these gardens are, in a sense, invasives, versus native plants. And it's nice to see a garden where they're paying some attention to that matter of native.
I think people are, in general, are paying a lot more attention to native plants. There are organizations, there's a group called the Wild Ones here locally, who promote the use of native plants. If you think about the prairie plants that you see down in Chiwaukee Prairie, those are our natives, and then it expands beyond that. I mean, our native landscape is prairie, but it's also forests and such. So there are forest plants, the Jack in the Pulpit, the trilliums, some of the flowers that I remember from when I was a kid were just exploring in the woods. But those are all natives that people in groups like Wild Ones and in general we're encouraged to incorporate those into our landscape. And some people have strict rules about that at their home. If it isn't a native, they don't want it in their landscape. There's plants that have been imported to this country from Southeast Asia. There are plants here that have, come through plants that were native to England and that part of the world, European plants. But the natives are always going to do well in our soil without the chemicals, without the spraying, without the pesticides, without all of those things that we're realizing are not so good for the plants and not so good for the people.
Right.
So there's a very strong movement toward incorporating more natives into any environment, any landscape.
Looks like there's a lot for us to learn from these seven gardens about the various ways they can be done, and a nice warm story behind each one. Just have about a minute or so left, Linda. So explain briefly how the logistics of this work and sort of the presence of the Four Seasons Garden Club at these gardens.
Absolutely. This is a self-guided tour. There is no particular order that you need to visit the homes. You're totally on your own. And at each one of the homes, there will be anywhere from 3 to 6, depending on the size of the yard, garden club members who can. They'll be taking tickets. They'll be answering questions. They'll be helping with identifying something that you're fascinated by, and the homeowners we encourage to be there also, because there's always a backstory to that plant that you fall in love with, and they'd be happy to. Gardeners love to talk about their work, so they're always happy to share their experiences. The tickets are available at a number of local ticket outlets, and let me quickly run down the list for you. They are available at Andrea's here in Kenosha on 60th Street, Sunnyside Florists, Stein's out on Green Bay Road, just the Kenosha location of Stein's, Anton's Greenhouse on Cooper Road, A Summer's Garden downtown, and up in Sturtevant, Milliger's in Sturtevant, again, just the Sturtevant location. Westosha Floral in Paddock Lake, and we get a few guests from across the border. So we also have a ticket outlet at Balmus Flowers in Gurnee. And all of the tickets are at these ticket outlets are for sale for $8. The tickets are $10 on the day of the tour if you purchase them at the homes, at the home addresses. And all of these, if you do wait till the last minute and then you're wondering, where do I find these homes so I can get myself a ticket, those locations are listed on our website. And there's general information.